Cooper comes up, hits it. Yeah!
Oh my God! What a goal! What a goal by Mick Fleming!
Go, Cleach.
There's the goal! Richie! Oh,
wow! Ben Cuthbert, she strikes. Goal! Aaron Cuthbert! Oh my goodness, what a start for Scotland!
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the official Scotland podcast here inside the museum at the National Stadium. Delighted to say we're joined by someone who needs no introduction, someone who's got a very, very busy summer ahead, the women's national team manager, Shelley Kerr. Shelley, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You?
I'm very well. 2 weeks to go. Where's the balance between excitement and also keeping your eyes on the prize and getting the last minute preparation sorted?
Yeah, it's been pretty hectic, especially the last week. Obviously, squad announcement, pre and post. Personally, it was tough. We've taken 23 players, but we could easily have taken 26. So to narrow it down was tough. Although we're comfortable with the decision, it's the disappointment and frustration, for the other players that haven't made it to our first World Cup. So it's been a tough week, but now we obviously need to focus on the Jamaica game. Really looking forward to that. Obviously at Hampden, we haven't played here for 7 years, and by all accounts, I think we're going to get a record crowd. So things are moving along quite nicely, and we're in a good place at this moment in time.
I'm sure there's plenty more to come. We'll discuss the World Cup in great detail. Let's take you back, though, personally. Let's go on a bit of a trip down memory lane. What are your first memories of playing football?
My first memories were, about 3-4 years old, and every single moment that I could, I had a ball at my foot. I'm the youngest of four, two older brothers and an older sister, and I was really encouraged at an early age to start kicking the ball, and I used to follow my two brothers about everywhere, so I was probably a pain to them both, but that's where it all started for me, and it just escalated from there. Played in my local community, a small village called Polbeth. Played with the next door neighbour, and then just in the village every single day. And then my first taste of organised football was at Parkhead Primary. So I was a young 10-year-old, and my art teacher spotted me playing in the playground and invited me along for a trial for the school team. And it was just the feeling back then where girls didn't play football. There was no formal infrastructure in place, so there wasn't any youth teams for females. And to be honest with you, it wasn't really the done thing for girls to play football. So for him to come along and ask me to go to the trial for the school team, I was absolutely ecstatic. It's probably a similar feeling to going to the World Cup, to be honest with you.
Were you the only girl in that team?
I was the only girl in the primary team at that point. So, at the time, there was a lot of kind of stigma attached for girls playing football. And, I guess on reflection, you look back and that's where your resilience and your character starts to get built up, as early as 9-10 years old. So, I played in my primary team, primary 5, 6 and 7. And then when I got to secondary school, I wasn't allowed to play with the boys. There was a rule in place at that time. And, my world was shattered, I have to be honest. As I say, there wasn't any youth teams that I could play. Couldn't play with the local boys club. So the next best thing was to get my parents to write a letter. It was my mum actually wrote a letter to the school and asked my PE teachers if I could take part in football. So that time, when the girls, you get separated, so the girls were doing dancing and the boys were playing football. So my mum wrote a letter, and thankfully my PE teachers, were accommodating and said, yeah, of course she can go and do football with the boys. So I played football, I had that in my curriculum at PE, didn't do dancing, which is a shame because I quite like dancing as well, but football was my passion. So I was allowed to take part in PE. I trained with the school team, but I wasn't allowed to play. So I basically, I then got my mum to investigate kind of where the senior women's team. So at the age of 13, I played for a team called Edinburgh Dynamo. We were based at Meadowbank. That's where they trained, and it was women twice my age that I was playing alongside. So I spent 2 years running up and down the touchline as a sub, and you know, hoping that I would grow so that I'd get stronger so that I could get a game in the team. But it didn't, you know, put me off any. It just, it made me more determined, I guess. So that's a kind of whistle stop tour, you know, where my career took me initially in terms of grassroots football.
And then eventually that leads on to becoming a Scotland international. You get your first cap, sorry for making you feel old, in 1989. I won't tell you if I was born or not, that'll just make it even worse. What are your memories of that game?
I remember it really well. You know, it's ironic because 30 years later, you know, you're going to a World Cup, and you know, in 1989 it was my first cap. I was young at the time. We didn't have age group teams then, so it was a full national team. There wasn't, you know, a 19s, a 17s or anything like that. So I was pretty young in terms of, you know, being selected at that age. And we played England at Starks Park. We lost 3-0. I came on as a second half substitution. I think there was maybe about 15 minutes to go. You know, when you're a sub, you always say there's more when you get on, but I can remember it was 15 minutes. And I was a striker. I was a forward back in the day, probably when I could run. But yeah, I came on. It was a great experience. I remember at the time, Hope Powell, who went on to become the England manager and done a lot for women's football down in England, she was playing that day in central midfield. So that was my first cap. And as I say, I remember it well. The build-up to it, I had to pay £50 to stay in the hotel, and there wasn't enough tracksuits for all the subs at the time. So I think I had the top on and one of the other subs had the bottoms on. So it's, you know, for me in my position now, it's been great to see the progress made in the women's game.
Because the thing is, I'm sure there's still more progress to be made, but when you look back on that, the setup then, that must be, you know, completely different.
It is, and I think that, you know, that's why it's important that we have, you know, we put in a legacy in the girls and women's game, and we don't forget all the females in the past that have paved the way for the players now. And, you know, there is a long way still to go, but in the time that I've been involved, you know, it's came along a long, long way.
I mean, the side of it that people perhaps don't see, you took a break from the game to give birth to your daughter. How challenging is that to then get back to the level that you ultimately wanted to play at?
Yeah, that was tough. I had 8 years out, and you know, other things were more of a priority in my life at the time. I'd got my cap, and I felt that you know the family side of things was important for me, and I went in a different direction. But I still had my passion. I was coaching at the time, and I had other things in my life. But then I decided, you know, I wanted to go back and play. And I remember being unhealthy, unfit. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to go back, I need to do it properly. So I did. I worked really hard. My previous manager, before I stopped playing, I went back to the club that she was at, and I got a bit of support. And, you know, I think it took me about three seasons to get up to a level. And the manager, the Scottish manager at the time, was Vera Powell. And I got invited to a trial, and, you know, I got back in. So my first cap was in 1989, and then my second one was in 2001.
It's quite an incredible journey. And then to fast forward you on a few years, by 2008, you're captain for the playoff defeat to Russia. Just in case anyone doesn't think that the women's team do hard luck stories as well, you go out on away goals. Talk us through those memories.
Yeah, I mean, I was really fortunate to play in a good team with good players. Julie Fleeton, you know, phenomenal player for the women's game in Scotland, a real ambassador. She was captain and I was vice captain. And I think the first leg, she was either suspended or injured, so I was captain the home game, and then she was back for the away game. And we went out and away goals, and that was the first time we had got to the playoff and got so close. And do you know, at the time, I remember being devastated at the time, because it was actually my last game. I'd already decided that it was the right time for me to retire. Not just the right time for me, but it was the right time for the team. And, you know, no matter if we had got to the finals or not, I was always going to make that decision. So I was devastated at the time for the team. But on reflection, I just didn't think we were quite ready to get to a final. So as much as, you know, it was maybe a hard luck story for everyone else, I didn't think we'd done enough, and you know, to merit going to the finals. That was my own personal view, but you could see that the progression was getting made all the time. Every campaign, we were getting better and better, more educated, and as I say, that was my very last game, so I remember it really well.
How do you reflect on the playing career as a whole then for the national side? As you mentioned, those were your last games, and I guess now you've had time to reflect on it all. How do you look back on it?
With great pride and a real honour. I think, you know, when I was a kid, not different from anyone else, no matter what sport you're playing, you always want to represent your country. And, you know, sometimes as a kid, you just think it's a dream. So to be able to go through, you know, from grassroots, the entry points at football, to go and get a cap, then captain your country, and, you know, it was a dream come true. I think when I look back now, it's great having the opportunity to lead the team to the World Cup, but nothing ever compares to playing and to represent your country, you know, in two different circumstances for me, the first time round and then the second time round. Those are key moments in my career that I'll never forget.
This is the bit where you have to be careful not to offend any of your former teammates. Who was the best player you played with at Scotland?
In Scotland, there's been many, I have to be honest, there's been many. But I would have to say Julie Fleeton, you know, a record goal scorer and really unselfish. She scored a lot of goals, but she was a real good team player off the pitch. You know, she liked a bit banter, and she was always there for you as a teammate, good, bad or indifferent. She was very encouraging, great with young players and good way, you know, even although I was a lot older than her. Very respectful in terms of every single individual circumstances. So she was fantastic, a real role model, and you know, you'll not see a better finisher in the women's game.
You were player manager then at Spartans. You take the Scotland 19s team to the Euros in 2010. What are the main changes you've seen in women's youth football then since that time?
I think the main changes is, you know, they're getting more educated earlier in their careers, and I think Scotland as a nation, you know, there is cultural challenges in terms of the athleticism, you know, what to eat, when to train, when to rest. And I think now the players are getting that education that perhaps in years gone by they didn't have. When we went to the finals in 2010, I had an extremely talented year group, you know, the likes of Emma Mitchell, Lisa Evans, you know, Rachel Small, and Jennifer Beattie was actually there as well. So we had a real talented group, Lee Alexander, we had a real talented group of players. But again, you know, all of those players I've mentioned, they've taken great, you know, steps in their own career in terms of educating themselves and developing as athletes. And I think that's the biggest difference for me. I mean, when I look back even to when I was a youngster playing, we had a lot of talented players in Scotland. You just maybe didn't have that holistic approach to their development like we have in place now. And it's all to do with resource and not necessarily financial resource. It's human resource, getting expertise that we can, you know, have our disposal in the women's game, because, you know, historically the best coaches and, you know, the experts migrate towards the men's game. So it's getting the resource that can be helpful for the women's game.
In terms of at club level then, how do you reflect on the period at Arsenal? What did you learn there? How do you look back on that as a time in your life?
Do you know, there's not a single thing in my career that I've ever regretted. You know, I think that you can maybe look back and say, I would make a different decision now. You know, I was at Spartans as a coach. I was at Hibs as player coach, Kilmarnock as player coach. And I was taking the 19s, and I'd been doing that for a few years. I think it was about 5 years. And the opportunity came along to go to, you know, the most successful women's team in the UK. And, you know, I jumped at the opportunity because I felt that I needed to develop in a professional club environment. You know, I reflect back and, you know, the time that I was there, you know, we got to the semi-finals of the Champions League. We won back-to-back FA Cups and a Continental Cup. But it was a transitional time for the club. I think the Man City came on the scene, they invested heavily, and you know, we had a group of players that were the best players in the UK, but they were coming to probably the end of an era. So it was great for me in terms of a big learning curve, because we had to obviously recruit new players. We were up against it in terms of other clubs resourcing, whereas before that, Arsenal had it very much their own way in terms of getting the best players. So it was a real challenge for me, personally and professionally, but it's something that I look back on and I think it was brilliant for me in terms of my development.
And then a very different challenge when you come back up to Scotland into the Lowland League with the University of Stirling, the first female manager to operate in the men's game at that level, which brings scrutiny, media attention. How do you look back on that time?
Yeah, it was really good, and it was almost by chance that it happened. I came back up from Arsenal. It was the first time since I left school that I didn't have a job, you know, and it was my decision to do that. And there was one thing that was playing on my mind, because I'd been through the coach education pathway and, you know, there was something missing in my own development. And I thought, I want to go to university, because I'd never been. I want to make a correlation between the practical side of football and sport and the theoretical side. So I'd applied to do a master's degree at Stirling Uni, and someone said to me, they're going to be looking for a coach. So I thought, I've got all this experience now. I felt I had the right credentials to do a really good job, and thought, if I can put my CV in and get an interview, then if I can get them in a room and talk to them, then I've got a chance. So thankfully, I was successful in the interview process and got offered the job. And it was literally, I went for an interview, and I think it was a Monday night, the Monday afternoon. I got a phone call on the Monday evening to say, you know, we're going to offer you the job. When can you start? And I said, now. So I was actually literally in at 7 o'clock the next morning meeting the players, and then by 6 o'clock that evening it was all over the world, not just in Scotland, but it was this big thing. And you know, I can remember I hadn't even told all of my family, I hadn't had time, and I remember going home at night and thinking, why is there a fuss about this? I couldn't understand the fuss, but it was. I think people at the time made it such a big thing. The university were getting contacted from Israel, India, Spain to do interviews about my appointment. And all I could think about was, we're bottom of the league. I'm appointed as a female, first time at this level, and we're playing Dalby Star, who are sitting, I think they were sitting second at the time. And all I was thinking, I just want everything to go away. I just want the game to happen and try and get a result, because I was conscious that, you're leading the way for other females, but, you know, if you don't get a result, then people are going to say, I told you so.
Yeah. Did that ever impact the job then? Did it feel like there was a bit of a sideshow going on? Did you ever feel like it made it more difficult?
Yeah, I mean, it did. I think that initially, the first few weeks was pretty hectic in terms of media. I have to say the players loved it, because they hadn't been used to getting as much attention, so they loved it. But in the meantime, for me, I just felt it was such a big distraction, and all I wanted to focus on was trying to get the team to get a bit consistency and climb the table. But I remember back, one thing that was really helpful for me was, well, two things. Two of the players I knew, which was quite helpful. One of them had came through the pro youth ranks with two of my nephews who are professional footballers and knew the family. So that helped, because, you know, he knew all about me and he was really supportive. He was the captain of the team as well. And then I had a senior player as well who bought into everything that I wanted to implement. And then the second thing was, I had my line manager, Raleigh Gowrie, at the university, and the late Pete Billsborough, who was a director of sport. He's sadly no longer with us, but on my first day, he took me into the office and he said, university life is all about developing people, Shelley, and you're no different. He said, I don't want you to worry about results. We hired you because you're the best person for the job, so you'll get an opportunity to work with this group of players and the programme to make a difference. And I always remembered that, and I thought, right away, you know, he took the pressure off, because, and also I was doing a 2-year degree programme, and in football, I think we all know, doesn't matter what your contract is, you know, you can be out the door as quick as you come in it. So that gave me a bit of reassurance, and I have to be honest, my time at Stirling Uni was magnificent. The first four games, I think, you know, we went on a wee run, you know, we got a draw in the first game, which was great because we played a team that were sitting second in the league. We went on to win another couple of games, and so I think we could build up, we managed to build up a bit of momentum and get some results, and that kept everyone away from this person that was doing the job, who just happened to be a female.
When Anna Signal then leaves the national team after Euro 2017, I think we're actually sitting in front of some of the memorabilia very conveniently. Can you remember the moment that you thought about the job, or the moment you were offered it, and how you felt in that instance?
Yeah, I think that it wasn't something that was in my plans, if I'm being honest. I was quite happy at still in uni. I had graduated. We were doing well with the team. I was doing a bit of lecturing at the uni, and I felt as if I was in a good place at that time. But obviously, it was announced that Anna was moving on, and as I say, there was an external recruitment company, and you know, they asked if I would be interested in that. And I'm a proud, passionate Scot, especially about women's football. I worked with all the players, and it was a no-brainer, you know, to actually then pursue through the process, the recruitment process. So I knew there would be a lot of, you know, other coaches worldwide attracted to the job because of the work that Anna had done and where the women's team were at that particular time. But for me, it was a case of, you know, let's go and put on put in a CV that, you know, explains all about me as a person and what I can bring to the job. And, you know, thankfully, I got an interview and I was successful. And I've been very clear from day one in terms of doing a full audit of the women's game and an evaluation and critically reflecting on where we were to try and then put a new philosophy in place and take the team to the next level. That's always been at the forefront of my mind.
Was that the first thing you did then when you came in? Because it must be a difficult balance. You want to put your own stamp on things, but you need to get results at the same time. What was the sort of first practical thing you did when you took over?
Yeah, I think we got an external company to do an audit from the Euros, because I wanted to get feedback, you know, about logistics, about the planning, about coaching, about every single facet towards how we prepared as a team. Because I felt that we had a good group of players, and we were in a good place. We were robust defensively, but I wanted to get feedback on how the players felt things went, and then from that, how do we take things to the next level? You know, from a distance, I was looking at the way that, you know, the team were, how they were set up, and were really, really hard to beat. But what Aludi does, and even when I played, it was, you know, the final third, and how can we become even more athletic, play with more intensity. And a huge thing for me was captivate the country. How do you change a perception of the women's game in Scotland? And the only way you can do that is by trying to entertain, getting results, and playing in a way that, you know, it's attractive football at times and exciting football. And, you know, every coach will say the same thing. They want to have a philosophy, a style of play, a system of play. But you know, you have opponents and you need to be flexible and adaptable, and you know that you can't be blasé to think that you can do it that way all the time. So myself and, you know, Andy Thompson, we came in and the audit and the evaluation that we'd done was a starting point for us. Then it was dissecting it all and then putting in a philosophy in terms of how we were looking at things from an infrastructure point of view. So how you grow the game and how our performance pathways would look. And then the second thing is, like you say, how do you get results? How can you, you know, obviously try and replicate what the team had already achieved by getting to their first finals?
I mean, the first chance you had to do that, I think you only had one friendly before the campaign started. What do you remember about that? How different was it as a debut as a manager compared to the one you experienced as a player?
So we had one friendly before, obviously, the World Cup campaign kicked off. We played Hungary away. We managed to obviously secure a bit of funding to get a game in, which was quite important. So, you know, the organisation, Scottish FA, were great, because I think obviously budget-wise in terms of the Euros, we probably overspent. So they were great and said, look, yep, happily put this on in terms of getting a friendly. So it was great. I think the first thing was that, you know, we addressed the players. I remember it well, the first team meeting. I actually showed the goals from the England game for the Euros. And the reason I'd done that was because, and I remember a tune, we played a little kind of, we had a video production. It was a tune, If You Get It Wrong, You Get It Right Next Time, Gerry Rafferty. And I thought it was really fitting because I said to the players that, you know, this is going to be our long-term vision and how we want to change. And within that, we need to critically reflect each other. We need to make sure that we can be in the best environment possible. We need to make it competitive. You know, nobody should be guaranteed a place in the national team. It should be a privilege, a right. So we had a set of guiding principles, 10 guiding principles. There was a football blueprint part. And, you know, from a tactical perspective, we said, this is how we want to play. It's going to take us a bit of time to get to where we want to be, but we're going to be patient as coaches, but you have to allow us the opportunity to give you critical feedback on where we're at as a national team. And they wanted it. You know, the players have bought into everything that myself and Andy try and put in place. So that was a starting point. I remember we actually won the game 3-0, and everybody was saying, great result, good start. But we actually gave the players a hard time after it, because I think we created something like about 21 chances in the game. And Andy had never worked in the female game before. And he obviously, his background as a striker, playing at various different clubs, and we actually gave them a real hard time about the amount of chances they created, goal-to-chance ratio, and said that in international football, this is something that you need to improve on. And, you know, I think the players went away thinking, wow, we've just won 3-0, you know, clean sheet, doesn't get any better, it's international football. But it was a starting point for us and a benchmark to say, you know, we don't want to accept that, because I think you've got more to give. And, you know, every single time we've been together, you know, we do similar. We set a target. We've got our objectives there. The overarching one for us is always to get to final tournaments. But every single camp we go on, there's objectives and targets set, and we're very clear about them.
When we're reflecting on this campaign, the great thing is we know it works out well in the end. But in the first game, you then go 1-0 down away to Belarus, and that's when the pressure's really on. The campaign's up and running. What's going through your mind at that point?
That trip was, it was a tough one, to be honest. You know, it's the first time in 12 years that, as a national team, they've got a new manager. That's me. Worked with a lot of the players before, some of them I played alongside. At the time, we're really in front in the game in terms of possession, creating chances, and, you know, it's one-way traffic. And you could only see a goal coming for us. And then a freak goal. Belarus go 1-0, but before that, we, you know, on the logistics side of it, our luggage didn't arrive, you know, so we're in Frankfurt, it was a stopover in Frankfurt, and then we were late for our next flight, so that delayed the luggage, so we actually had to train in Belarusian kit when we were there, so everything, myself and Andy, you know, I was coaching with my glasses on. Andy didn't have any spare contact lenses, and it was kind of like that, and you're thinking, is this for real, you know? So eventually, you know, the kit arrived and whatever, and we were fine, and in the game at half-time, we were very calm. Very calm with the players. You know, you'll win the game. Don't panic. You know, keep on doing the right things. Do what we ask you to do. Create the chances, and you'll win the game. And you know, they did. They were very composed in the second half in particular, and it was waves of attack. You know, we come away from the game and everyone's thinking, oh, they were lucky, it was 2-1. It was 2-1 going on 8-1. But the starting point, it was tough for us. And then we came home and, you know, one of the players had a bereavement in the family. And so there was a lot of things, and that was the starting point for us in the campaign. There was a lot of things that as a group we had to contend with, and I have to say the players just matured and matured and matured all the way through the campaign.
Yeah, so you win that game 2-1. Things get a little bit more comfortable, luckily, for a while anyway. The 5-0 win against Albania next up, how satisfying was that? A real, you know, convincing performance, but scoreline as well.
It was great. I mean, I remember it was October and we were at the Simple Digital Arena, and I think, take out the goals, the performance was magnificent. We played with intent, we played with intensity, and it got the crowd really up for it. And, you know, for me that was a big thing, because initially I knew we'd get the Hungary game, and then we had this double header, and I wanted to be in a position, a new coach coming in after 12 years of Anna's good work on the back of it, winning the friendly game and getting 6 points on the board. And then I knew we would have a bit of time then to then actually start to go into the nitty-gritty of the blueprint and try and implement more of our philosophy. So those were key moments at the very, very start to get off to a good start. So it was really, really instrumental in terms of the team growing.
And then a different challenge, because when you play Switzerland, they're then the top seeds in the group. So that supposedly, you know, on paper, that's the benchmark. It's a 1-0 away defeat. But how do you reflect on that? Did you see positives to make you think that you could still progress?
I did. Myself and the staff, I think the players were a bit disappointed. And I think, you know, the reports after the game from the media weren't too flattering for us either. I think they felt that, we could have done more to go for it. I remember saying to Andy on the touchline, because we were, you know, deliberating in terms of substitutions, and I said, 1-0 might not be a bad scoreline here for us. I felt as in that game in particular, at the time we were in terms of our development, if we had opened up, we might have been vulnerable, because their attacking threat, you know, was phenomenal. So, and I felt if we had done that, given the fact that we had a home game against a really tough Poland team, I thought it might dent the confidence a little bit. So it was very calculated. As much as we, it wasn't that we played for a draw or anything, it was just the way the game panned out. I think it was Kim's first game back after being out. So, you know, there was a lot of things that we factored in that game. And then obviously, going back after the Switzerland game, I was trying to say to the players, look, you know, just hang fire here, you know, be confident. We've got a tough opponent in Poland to play, and that's not the worst result for us. They're a really, really good team, and they are. I think that even on our successful campaign, people still think about Switzerland. Or they were a really, really good team. So, and I don't think we get the credit for that we deserved. Even although we've got to the World Cup, I don't think people appreciate how good a team Switzerland were. But going back, home game against Poland, yeah, that was another tough game for us, because again we probably didn't play as well as what we could have in the first half, and then we made a substitution in the second half, and we gave away a penalty. It was, in my opinion, never a penalty. Justice was probably done. Lee makes a good save, and we then win the game quite comfortably. But I think the key thing I remember about that game is at half-time, we were actually going to make substitutions at half-time, and I didn't want to do it at half-time because I felt that they would tire, Poland would tire. And I think the left-back had been booked at the time, and I said, let's play on that side because, you know, they're getting tired, she's been booked, and then, true to form, she gets second yellow, gets sent off. You know, Lee saves the penalty before that, and we go on and we end up winning the game quite comfortably. We win it 3-0. But that was a tough, tough game for us. Tough game.
Football's full of big moments. In fact, we're in the museum surrounded by memories of big moments. When you look back on that penalty save from Lee, how big a moment was it to think what then followed?
It was. I think before that, and I probably shouldn't share this, but I think if you look back in the our footage, the tactical footage, Emma Mitchell goes up and points to the referee and the player about the ball not being on the spot. And there's a little bit of a set to between her and Payor, who takes the penalty. And eventually, obviously, Lee saves it. But there was a wee bit of game management in there. And, you know, it worked in our favour. And it's something else that we've been, you know, trying to speak to the players about. To get to the next level, you need to be streetwise. You need to manage the game at certain times. And they done it brilliant. Looking back, penalty save was huge. penalty moment surrounding it was huge. And then to go on and play on that side, and the player get a second yellow, get sent off, and you know, I think at the end we created, you know, a few really good chances after that. But to finish 3-0, it ended up being a comfortable win, but it wasn't all the way through the game.
This might be a difficult question when you're the one that's caught up on it. How do you feel your manner is as a manager? Are you one that kicks every ball? Are you a bit more reserved?
I think I try to be reserved, but it's not always possible. It's tough because coaching and managing is different. You know, coaching, you obviously devise a game plan according to the players that you've got, who's all fit, but also in tactically how you can outfox your opponents, taking into account their strengths and weaknesses. Managing is about getting the best out of people. And I think most managers are the same. You want to lead, but you want to help people. So when you're on that touchline, there's an element that you're trying to get tactical information, but there's an element that you are actually just going through every single phase of play. And sometimes it can be tough. I do try to be calm. I do try to be constructive, and I do try to be positive as much as possible. You know, what would the players think of that? I don't know. You'd need to ask them. But I do try and keep my emotions intact as much as possible.
There's a bit of deja vu about the next Belarus game. Again, you go 1-0 down, but Aaron Cuthbert scores twice. You win the match 2-1. Was that another one where you perhaps think it should have been a bit more comfortable in terms of taking more chances?
I think I would use the word frustration. You know, I think the goals that we conceded in the campaign, we shot ourselves in the foot a wee bit, you know, and... You know, we have spoke about that as well. How do you take that and eradicate that from your game? Because you're putting yourself under unnecessary pressure. And I remember doing a little kind of theoretical session with the players after that, because it was Belarus and then Poland away. And so it was actually in Poland that we set them a task in groups, and I said, I want you to critique the goal. And we weren't sure what we were going to get from all of the different groups, but there was one group in particular that actually named every single player, every single process, part of the process, in terms of who could have done what. And it was a really good exercise because you had a group that was being more generic. Well, we should have pressed from the front, we should have done this. But there was a group that actually...
Just went for it.
And... I can remember at the time thinking how this could go one way or another, but actually it ended up as a group. They were all laughing and, you know, took it on board. And I said, well, look, sometimes at this level you have to critique, as long as it's done in the correct manner and you recognise and you take responsibility and you learn from it, because we are conceding goals that we don't need to concede. So it was a good exercise to do. And but again, in that game you're thinking... Tactically, we'd went through how to play. We'd actually worked on them playing into the middle of the pitch to go and press them and win the ball higher up the pitch. And it worked a treat for us. It's just we switched off in a moment that... And I think sometimes that happens subconsciously when you're a player. It's almost like you know that you're better. You've got better players, but sometimes, in moments of the game, you switch off a wee bit and it can cause you problems, because in international football, there's always players that can hurt you. And always teams that can hurt you if you're not switched on. And for us, that happened in the campaign quite a wee bit.
We spoke about Erin being the match winner in that game. How big a player has she developed into? And I suppose how much room is there for her to go on and be even better?
I'll be honest, and you know, Erin knows this, the first game against Belarus, we didn't play Erin. And the reason we didn't play her was because at that particular time, she was still working on her physical capacity to play in double headers, and obviously same at our club, she was getting a certain amount of minutes but no playing, you know, full 90 minute game, so she didn't start for us in a Belarus game. So to see the transformation in terms of where she's at now has been great to watch, but that happens with any young player, and you've got to have a degree of patience. There's absolutely no doubt in how talented she is, but she's worked really, really, well, extremely hard in terms of her physical development now, so you can see a massive difference in her.
Now, talk about a roller coaster. Poland away, you're 2-0 down, 12 minutes to go. You said you try and stay calm, you try and stay reserved, but what is going through your mind at that moment?
I can tell you exactly.
Keep it clean.
Okay. I was sitting on the bench and I remember saying to Andy, how on earth are we losing this game? Is exactly what I said. And he said, we're both saying the same thing. We never panicked. I think, again, looking at Poland, scrutinising them, watching them over the campaign, we knew that they would tire. The unfortunate thing for us was that we went 2 goals down. The second one, really unfortunate, OG, but both goals against the runny play. And then I was thinking, I remember looking up at the clock, actually, and thinking, how long have we got to go here? And I remember looking up at the clock, and we got the free kick, and it went in, and I thought, if we get one here, before the free kick went in, I thought, if we get one here, we could go on and win the game. And as crazy as that might sound, I've been involved in so many games as a player and a manager where that 2-0 scoreline, you're comfortable, the opponents are comfortable, whoever's winning that game is really comfortable, but that moment, you get a goal back and all of a sudden...
The nerves just kick in.
The nerves kick in, the pressure, it's almost like, wow, what are we going to do? And I've experienced that as well as a manager and a player. And I just felt that at the time, they started to get a bit deeper and deeper. And I thought, great, if they had went for it and played higher up, I think we would have struggled. But because they went deeper and, you know, fatigue kicked in for them, I could see us getting stronger and stronger. The goal gave us that kind of impetus to kind of go and, you know, try and go for another. And it seemed to raise the energy levels, the confidence again, and they just went for it. I remember getting the second goal and they almost scored. I think Lee made another good save at that point. And then, you know, we're delighted with the second goal and you're thinking, do you know what, be okay getting a draw out of this considering, but we were still actively out there trying to get that third goal, and that's credit to the players because we had a confidence that we could get the third goal. And I think before the third goal, we had actually hit, it was either the post or the bar, I think it was maybe Aaron had a great chance, and then when Lisa cuts in and puts the goal across the face and it went in, it was just absolutely incredible, a brilliant feeling for the players, myself, the staff. And again, the one thing I remember is Kim actually pointing to the corner flag. So after, you know, we celebrate, so we score, and I think Lisa starts to run back, and the players start to run back, but Kim actually points to the corner flag, so they then about turn and go up and to try and
waste a wee bit of time.
To be fair, the players have taken that one board themselves. They're shown a real maturity and being streetwise in terms of managing the game.
A goal like that, you don't care how it comes. You don't care if it goes in off somebody's backside, but just a gloss that it was a goal worthy of winning any game.
I remember Lisa playing with my under-19s, and she scored goals like that every time we played. You know, being on the opposite side, cutting in, drifting in, she'd go either side. But it was something at that moment, she had an injection of pace, and the fullback at that point in time was really, really struggling. Fiona Brown started that game on that side, and as much as Fiona didn't get much success down that side, it was tough for the fullback, and we knew that again that she would tire, so you know she was probably thinking when Lisa came on the side, oh no, another one. So Lisa's went on that side and, as I say, used her pace and technique driving across, and yeah, the ball going in the net, it was absolutely fantastic, a great moment for us all.
And then of course on the back of that high, you come back for the home game against Switzerland, which is a record crowd, yeah, for the Scotland women's national team. Do you think that played any part in how quickly you started the game, going 2-0 up very early?
Yeah, 100%. The team meeting the night before, I remember saying to the players, for us to get into the top 10 in Europe, you need to beat a higher ranked team than you when it matters. It matters tomorrow. Everybody's talking about you need to win by 2 goals. Forget it. Forget the 2 goals. Just go and win the game. Your task tomorrow night is to go and win the game. Don't worry about goal difference. That'll take care of itself. Just go and win the game. That's the challenge to you. Is that putting pressure on you? Yeah, it is. You need to cope with the pressure at the highest level. And we worked on, changed our tactics a bit. We knew we'd be at home. We knew the crowd was going to be good. So get the crowd on your side early doors. To do that, go and press them. We had identified, you know, maybe the goalkeeper was, had a weakness of kicking the ball. Centre back had came in. We felt that if we put her under pressure, that there was a mistake in there. And from the off, they one of their best players, fullback Kronkerchevic, she was actually injured in the warm-up, and they brought in another player. And so we got the wire from our video analyst to say she's not played many games. Weren't sure whether she would play on the left or the right. And right away, we've said to them, you know, before kickoff, whatever side she's on, go and put her under pressure. She hasn't played a lot, and obviously it's a big thing for her getting put in after, you know, the player gets injured in the warm-up. So we've done that, and, you know, say for the first, second minute, we pressed them really high, and we find ourselves two goals up, and it was absolutely amazing hearing the support. It was tremendous. And then they go and get a goal. It was the most exciting game ever to be involved in.
Well, that's the thing. So when they then do score, it's then not in your hands anymore. So what did you've spoken about what you said to the players before the game about not worrying about the, you know, that side of it. What do you then say to them after when it's not in your hands?
Do you know what? I can remember that night going home. Forget the players at this moment in time. I never slept a wink after that game, because we opened up latterly in the game, and I kept on thinking, what did I do? What if we had conceded? You know, we were still, in my opinion, in with a great chance of qualifying automatically, because I knew that Switzerland would find it tough going away to Poland. So I'm thinking, what did I do? You know, I was questioning myself and the tactics about having a go rather than actually protect the 3 points. And, you know, I spoke to Andy and everybody. He said, look, that's what we've tried to implement, you know, to the players about being more attacking, being more an attacking team. We absolutely done the right thing, but it was eating away at me. I thought, what if they had scored? And it's still something that I think about now, momentarily, of course. But I think going back to the players afterwards, they were disappointed, because obviously if we had got the two clear goals, we would have been going to Albania and it being very much in our hands. Now we were relying on, obviously, Poland not doing us a favour, because that's probably wrong, but actually we were relying on what happens in the other game. But I was confident we would win in Albania, and I was actually really confident that Poland would get a result against them. I was, because they had a tough game against us, and then they were going to another tough game against Poland. They were celebrating, which really annoyed me. I kept that to myself at the time, but I can remember a few of the players and the coaching staff celebrating. And I was saying to myself, under my breath, you're not there yet. You guys aren't there yet. So when I addressed the players, I said, that was an amazing performance. I've never seen a performance like that for a Scotland team. And all the time I've been involved as a coach, manager, as a player, it was phenomenal. Don't be disappointed. Do not be disappointed. This isn't over yet. We win the game in Albania and see where it takes us. And we had a day off, or a couple of days off, came back in, and then, you know, our long travels to Albania, and yeah.
When it is all said and done in Albania, I mean, is that the pinnacle? Is that the best moment of your footballing career?
100%. I don't think anything will ever replicate that moment. You, again, for the last 10 minutes, you're getting a countdown for the kit man about what's happening in the other game. Because I was oblivious to it. We decided not to talk about it. Never told the players at half-time. Didn't mention it at all. But that last 10 minutes is, you know, will live with me forever, because we had players in the stand that were starting to kind of get a wee bit edgy, and that's starting to transfer to the ones that were on the bench, and the players on the pitch were starting to, you know, give it what's happening, Shelley, and I'm saying concentrating the game. So as the final kind of minutes are approaching, I got the wire from the kit man to say that's it, done, it's finished, the game's finished, it's 0-0. And at that point, I see Albania making a double substitution. They're delighted with 2-1, so they're actually trying to waste time and whatever else. And Caroline Weir gets the ball, and we're telling the players just to keep it. And she pops one delivery into the box, and I can remember saying to Andy, I'm going to kill her. And then I think it was a goal kick. We win the ball back, and we have it in the left-hand corner down in their final third, and that's that moment where the final whistle went, and it was just, what a feeling. Everything, emotions, just for the players, so happy for the players, just really, really proud. And, you know, it's a moment that I think will live with the players forever, but for me as a coach, it's the proudest moment in my career.
Incredible moment. And here we are. The World Cup is very much round the corner. You've got the fact that you're there, but I can tell by listening to you, you want to go and do something now that you're there. You've got the tough draw, England in the mix as well. How do you look at it all with a couple of weeks away?
Very positive. I think we have got a talented group of players. They're well prepared. We know it'll be tough. England and Japan and Argentina. When you go to a World Cup, it doesn't matter who you play. You know, even when the draw was made in December, it wouldn't matter what group we were in, it's going to be tough. But I'm excited about it. Our task is to get out the group, simple as. Do I think we can do it 100%?
So it's not about making up the numbers?
No, absolutely not. If we're making up the numbers, then don't even go. Don't go for the experience. That's not what we're all about as a national team. I think it's about developing again at the highest level and playing on a world stage. These players deserve that. They deserve to get the opportunity to showcase what they've got on a world stage. We can't control everything when we go there, but we can influence and we can prepare as best as we can. And I think the big thing for us will be coping, playing in the highest pressure ever as a footballer and as a team. And we've got to be able to deal with that. Throughout the campaign, that's helped us because we've had to face challenges, adversity, you name it. It's developed the resilience within the team. So are we ready to compete in a World Cup? To right we are. And, you know, let's see how we get on. But certainly for me, the message is quite clear that we're going there to get out the group stages.
I think that seems like an excellent point to end on, Shelley. It goes without saying we wish you very well. Hope you've enjoyed that, and it's got you right looking forward to the World Cup this summer. Please subscribe to the Scotland National Team podcast. Plenty more where that came from. And again, Shelley, we wish you well. Thanks for joining us.
Cooper comes up, hits it.
Yeah! Oh, what a shot! What a goal! What a goal by Mick Fagan!
Doug Leach. There's the goal! Richie!
Ben Cuthbert, she strikes, goal! Erin Cuthbert! Oh my goodness, what a start for Scotland!